Sometimes we're sitting in class and we zone out. And sometimes life just gets in the way and we're absent. So I've recorded this so that you wouldn't miss the highlights of geometry class this week. Take a listen, enjoy, hopefully you make some connections. We've been continuing to talk about congruent figures in class, but we've moved to making congruent figures in the coordinate plane using transformations. Now, the transformations that we have been focused on are what we call rigid motion, which means we preserve the shape and the size of the object that we are transforming. To preserve the shape and size means that we're creating congruent figures in the coordinate plane. So that means all our angles remain the same, all our sides remain the same, we just put them in a new location. Non-rigid motion would mean I change the size and the shape of the figure. When we're doing transformations in the coordinate plane, we start with our pre-image. So that's the figure that is either already graphed for us, or that they're asking us, how was it moved? And it's just what we start with. Pre means before, so it makes sense that that's our starting point. And then the new shape that we graph is called our image. So it's what we end up with when we're finished. Now, when we're looking at a graph to determine which one is our image and which one is our pre-image is typically labeled with just A, B, C, D, whatever letters, okay? And then when we get to our image, that is going to have those same letters, but the letters will have an apostrophe. They could have more than one apostrophe, actually. And those apostrophes are called primes. So one movement is A prime, B prime, C prime. If we did two movements, it would be A double prime, B double prime, C double prime. Three would be a triple prime, okay? So you're looking for three apostrophes then by that A, B, and C. And that tells us, you know, how we know, well, which one was our image and which one was our pre-image? Where did we start and where did we finish? So if we talk specifically about our three types of transformations we've been working with, the first one was a translation. So that meant we slid a figure up, down, left, and right on the coordinate plane. So if I'm going left and right, that is a movement that I apply to X. So a positive movement for X is to go to the right. So that means I'm adding. If I am doing a negative movement for X, that means I'm going to the left. So that means I'm going to subtract a given number. And then to go up, that is applied to Y. So I add a number to Y. Whereas if I go down, I subtract a number from Y. So, and this happens to every single point on the figure. So if I translate a whole shape, everybody's going to go the same distance in the X values and the same distance in the Y values. We're not going to change that up at all. Our second transformation was a reflection. And that's like when we look in the mirror. If you think about it, if you have a shirt with words on it, those words are going to be reflected. So they're going to look backwards in the mirror. So when we reflect, we flip things over a reflection line. So I kind of think of my reflection line as being my mirror. The key to a reflection is that the points are equidistant from the reflection line. So that means if I have A prime is going to be on the other side of that reflection line the same distance. And if I have B, it's going to be on the other side of the reflection line the same distance away that, so B and B prime will be the same distance away from that reflection line. Okay, so when we do this, we can reflect over the x-axis, so that would change the sign of all of our y values. We can reflect over the y-axis, which would change the sign of all of our x values. We can reflect over the line y equals x. So remember, that's a review from like slope and y-intercept. And what that does is that changes the order of our points. So if we have x, y as our point, they just flip and become yx for our numbers. And then if we do that negatively, so we have y equals negative x, we flip the point and we change those signs. Now we can reflect over a line like y equals 2, and y equals 2, remember, is a horizontal line, or a line like x equals 5, and that is a vertical line. Now, where reflections are reflected over a line. We have rotations where we turn things about a point on the graph. And we pretty much based everything on the point 0, 0, the origin. And our degrees determines how far we move on the graph. So if we rotated 90 degrees, that moved us one quadrant. If we rotated 180, that was two quadrants on the graph. And if we rotated 270, that was three quadrants. Now we had clockwise and we had counterclockwise, and that's totally based on, well, are you going around the clock to tell time? Or are you going backwards around the clock, which is not helpful for telling time? And so that determined, well, which way did we go? Remember, 180 doesn't need any direction because you can turn twice to the left or you can turn twice to the right and you're going to end up in the exact same spot. And 270 and 90 kind of go hand in hand. So if I go 90 clockwise, that's the same as going 270 counterclockwise and vice versa. Now, when we rotate and reflect figures, we can actually map them onto themselves. So that just means we may reflect over a line down the middle of a shape. Or to rotate something onto itself, we use rotational symmetry. And the way we figure out a shape's rotational symmetry is determined by how many lines of symmetry does a shape have. And we take that number of lines. So for example, a square has four lines of symmetry. And we divide 360 by 4 and get 90. So if we rotate a square 90 degrees, 180 degrees, 270, 360, we will get the square to map onto itself. In other words, it'll just match back up. Now we do have a few anomalies with that. For example, a parallelogram. So it doesn't have any lines of symmetry, but it kind of acts like a rectangle. We could force a parallelogram to be a rectangle, and a rectangle has two lines of symmetry. So we can actually rotate it 180 and 360 degrees for it to map onto itself, but it doesn't have very many lines of symmetry at all. Whereas a circle has infinite lines of symmetry, so any degree we rotate it, it will map onto itself. So the key there is, well, how many lines of symmetry does the shape have? And divide that number of lines of symmetry into 360 to figure out how many degrees you can rotate your shape. Thanks for joining me for another episode of Geometry Highlights. I hope you caught some of the big ideas and you didn't miss the point. See you next week.